This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Going to have Danny Kluppinger join us here as we're talking about Wimbledon. Well underway here in the first round beginning. It'd be great to catch up with Danny and her thoughts. Zachary Cohen. Zach's going to join us here to round out hour number three as well. Again, our senior writer and editor here at VSiN. Very excited about the NFL betting guide that's going to be released tomorrow. But we begin hour number three by going to the king of Connecticut, the one and only Will Hill. He is not the Will Hill on X. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line, the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. And Will, I need you to talk me off the ledge to begin the conversation today. My group text for Meet the Mess was blowing up this weekend. Are the Pirates just the best team in baseball? Should we cancel the rest of the season? It was as bad as three games as it goes. What's going on with the Mets, and is there any possible wager that you could confidently put on the boys in Queens?
You know, I would really love to read the contents of that group text just to soak in the pain and enjoy it from my perspective. I would say if you're going to put a positive spin on it, there's a couple ways to do it. I mean, look at what you went through last year and how bad it was going into June when they had the reliever throw his glove in the stands and quit the team and say, I'm on the worst team in baseball. They were two games away eventually from going to a World Series. They rallied. They beat the Brewers. They beat the Phillies. You know, they made the playoffs in dramatic fashion. So it's a long season in baseball. And I would think about the other team in New York. Last year, the Yankees lost 23 out of 33 right around this time of the year. They were an awful team for most of the summer. They get back on their feet and they made a World Series. So it's baseball. It's a long season. You get these ebbs and flows. Now, this is an exaggerated one, an extreme one. This is an extended one. I thought those two wins against the Braves were really big, and I thought that was them getting back on track and maybe putting the bad baseball behind them. And then they go out and they basically lose. Was 30-3 over the three games, 30-4 over the three games against the Pirates. Not just lose, but absolutely get buried. You know, the team meeting didn't help. I still think at FanDuel plus 155 to win the division, I actually think there's some value there because I thought all along this race will come down to the wire the last week, maybe even the last weekend. And I still feel that way. I mean, I understand right now if you feel like, oh, the Phillies are going to pull away, that's somewhat you're being a prisoner of the moment because this is just these are two pretty equal teams. The Mets will make some moves. And I think you got to inject some life. You got to inject some live arms into that rotation. They got these two kids in the minors. They got Sproat in Tongs. If you look at their numbers, their strikeout numbers, they're off the charts. Now, there's got to be a reason they haven't, you know, brought them up. I actually saw Sproat pitch in person last summer in Hartford against the Yargo T. He's got really good stuff. Flirts with 100. Tongs is really good. I mean, the Paul Blackburns of the world, you got to get a little more life into the team. And sometimes you've seen this. We've all seen this in baseball before. You're struggling. It's a long season. You're not playing well. You're in a rut. You call up some youth and injects a little life, injects a little energy into the team. I think if you get these young guys in the rotation and they need it with Canning hurt, McGill, Senga, Blackburn has not been the pitcher they thought they traded for. So I would go with some youth, try to get some youth into the team. Alvarez is hitting down a triple A, maybe get him back up. But I don't think all is lost. I think they have a run of them. I think it's a good team. Soto started to hit. The bottom of the lineup hasn't given much. The injuries all beat up, but this is still a good Mets team, and I think it'll still come down to the wire.
Who knew that Luis Severino was going to be someone that the Mets could sorely use right now in that rotate? I know, probably too soon. By the way, shout out Jorge Lopez. Watches our show every single day. Now he's a free agent. Epic glove toss. And one of the great post-game pressers of all time. Okay, let's stay in the National League East here. I know you got to play on the Phillies tonight. Good one with them returning back home here with Zach Wheeler on the mound. Matt Waldron will get the start here for the Padres. First game on an abbreviated docket here. Will, what do you like in this matchup?
Yeah, I'll lay the 1.5 with the Phillies, which I usually don't like laying the 1.5, especially at home. But this is, to me, a pretty big mismatch. Wheeler's about as good as it gets. Possibility we get Harper back tonight. He's been out a while. It seems like today's been the day. They've been circling. He's been traveling with him on the road trip. So a possibility you get the boost of adding Harper. Phillies always hit better at home. And if you look at Waldron, knuckleball guy, he was bad to end the year last year. He hasn't been with the team all year. He's been in the minors. Hasn't gone great in the minors. He's allowed a lot of base runners, a lot of walks, hits, runs, everything you don't want to see, he's allowed. His numbers in the minors have been awful. So I think the Phillies get to him, especially at home. I think Wheeler, you know, puts up a good game, and I'm okay laying the run and a half, even though you're probably not getting the ninth at bat here, which is tricky. It's not a great habit of laying a run and a half here with the home team, but I like Philly here. I think they win comfortably.
I believe I saw you tweet out last week that you were really excited to watch Paul Skenes and Jacob Mizrowski have a pitcher's duel. It didn't materialize, that one, that we all were excited to watch there with the two young guns. What about today with Chase Burns going to be taking on Garrett Crochet? Would that interest Will Hill to plop up the feet and watch maybe seven innings of good starting pitching?
Absolutely. I'll be hosting VEASAN Primetime tonight with Tim Murray. This will be, I would think, our game of the night. This is a fun pitching matchup. Crochet against Burns. I can't believe this. You can get a 4.5 in the first five at DraftKings right now to the under. I like that. And if you go to FanDuel, you can get a 3.5. So I would imagine that 4.5 does not last long, at least with the juice. That seems like a bad number to me. Crochet has been dominant. The Reds have not hit lefties very well at all. So this is, I understand it's good hitting weather tonight. It's going to be good hitting weather. A lot of these environments here, warm throughout the country. This is a good night to hit pretty much around baseball. But if you guys watch Burns, man, the real deal, he's as good as the Skenes comparisons were made before, and I hadn't really watched him pitch. Jensen, I'm sure you're familiar with him being an SEC guy. My goodness, he was the real deal. Now, the final stat line against the Yankees doesn't look as good as, you know, it was just watching in person, where he struck out six guys in the first two innings. I have him 100-1 rookie of the year. I tweeted that out the last Saturday night when they called him up, that, you know what, 100-1 wide open race, why not? He went down to 3-1 like his second inning in the big league. So I don't think it's ultimately going to get home. It's just one of those where you grab a number, but we'll see. I think this is a good pitching matchup to me. This is like a 1-1, 2-1 after five innings. I think this is an under. And I would take a half a run in the first five too, because I think in a game like this where runs are valuable, you can get a half a run in the first five. That's extremely valuable, but should be an outstanding pitching matchup. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Remarkable, Will, because in our Daily Dime, we talked about it. Red Sox 2-5 in Garrett Crochet's seven home starts. Just remarkable. Usually when you're ace on the hill at home, that's as good a recipe for success as possible. The last time we saw Patrick Corbin pitch this well, he was a teammate of mine in Arizona way back in 2012. By the way, that was the late Tyler Skaggs, Trevor Bauer, and Patrick Corbin. Those were our three top starters.
Wow.
With the Reno Aces there. Pretty good. It'll be the Orioles and the Rangers deep in the heart of Texas tonight. Trevor Rogers gets the ball for the O's. Two offenses that have gone nowhere this year, and potentially a spot that you like to back in another under scenario as well.
Yeah, I'll go under 4.5 in the first five here as well. The fade Patrick Corbin, just bet against him blindly. That worked for a number of years, really since they won the World Series from 2020 until last year. It was a guy you could just blindly fade, whether it was yes run in the first inning, team total over, side over, whatever way you wanted to play, it was pretty much good. That has not been the case this year. He's been respectable. He's been a competent pitcher. Whatever Texas has done to unlock him, he's really pitched pretty well here. And you get a Baltimore team that really struggles against lefties. And then Rogers, last time out, was dominant. And he's another guy who he's been up and down. Orioles traded for him last summer. He hasn't pitched well. He's been hurt. But he was a guy, 2021, early in his career, he made an all-star team, and he was dominant. So the stuff is there. Anytime you can be that good that early in your career, you have the potential. The capability is there. It's just a matter of unlocking it and getting him back healthy and, on the right track. So I think two sort of underrated lefties here. Texas, man, they really struggle to score. I don't know if you guys saw that yesterday against Seattle. That was a bad beat if you had the under, because that was like 1-1 in the ninth. It ends up 6-4 in extras. Mm-hmm. But Texas, the team really struggles to swing the bats. Orioles struggle against lefties. To me, this has the makings of a first five under here. And weird scheduling quirk. Well, these teams played last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And now here they are facing off again a week later in Texas as opposed to Baltimore.
Well, I want to ask you about one game. Me and Jensen talked about this team earlier in the program, and that's Toronto. Mad Max is back. Scherzer's going to be in the bump here against Carlos Rodon of those Yankees. They're 6-1 right now to win the division. I know Tampa Bay's ahead of them right now as well. They're about plus 390. What do you make of Max coming back? And do you think that he could be that lift in that rotation to make that 6-1 number playable?
Probably not. I still think the Yankees ultimately win the division. I think they have enough at the top of the rotation with Rodon and Fried, and in the lineup, you know, will come around, even though there's a lot of soft spots around Judge. They need someone to replace LeMahieu. You know, it's interesting. They let Gleyber Torres go, and they have a black hole at second base, and Torres has basically been the best second baseman in the league. I can't kill him for it. His defense base running was horrible, but it was time to move on. But that is interesting, I think, underplayed. But, no, I mean, I would say this. Max Scherzer, he must have a minor league uniform from every team in the country with all of the rehab starts he has made here over the last, like, 3 or 4 years. It seems like he's always rehabbing, but I just don't know. Can he stay healthy? Do they have ultimately what it takes? You're probably going to need to win 94, 95 games to win the AL East, maybe 93, somewhere in that range. I just don't know if Tampa, Toronto, good stories, good teams, dangerous teams to get in the playoffs. I just don't know if they have the upside to get like the mid-90s in terms of wins that you're probably going to need to get to.
Are you excited for the betting guide to come out tomorrow?
Can't wait. Was able to see some of it. It is well worth your time, well worth your money. A lot of information, a lot of picks. It's a great time of the year to you know, start prepping for football.
Are you betting the Vikings or the Cowboys? Who are you betting this year?
I can't bet the Vikings again. I had so many great numbers on them to be the one seed, to win it all, 60-1, NFC, everything, and got to Detroit, and it just got off the rails. That's still, man, that still haunts me, all that horrible, really two-game sweep comes for Darnold. But it started in Detroit. I knew once they lost to Detroit, I didn't have much faith against them in the Rams. That was, man.
Join us down, you know, in Dallas.
Guys wide open all over the place. I don't
join us down in Dallas this year, Will. Come on over to the big Cowboys. Come on over for the big win this year. That's what we're doing. There he is, everybody. Check out the podcast, the Should Have Bet More pod. It is fantastic. Give him a follow on X at Not The Will Hill. Our best bets are next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Enjoyed that conversation with Will Hill in the last segment. Danny Kloppinger is going to join us here in the next segment, talking all things Wimbledon over there at the All England Club. And we were talking about the Mets there with Will Hill in the last segment. He's got a play on them at plus $1.55 to still win the NL East. Gives me great hope as a fan. I have no wagers on my Metropolitans as a rooting interest only right now because I've been burned so many times in the past. But Uncle Steve, as I like to call him, Steve Cohen, did tweet this out, and everybody goes to X these days and puts their words out there. And Steve said this: tough stretch, no sugarcoating it. I didn't see this coming. I'm as frustrated as everybody else. We will get through this period. Our injured pitching will come back over the next few weeks. It's unlikely this team's hitting with runners in scoring position will continue at this weak pace. Keep the faith. Jensen Lewis, should I keep the faith? Because Uncle Steve is keeping the faith. Well, what I'm hearing in that tweet is that he's waiting on the injured guys to come back and maybe not running to the trade window. Do you pick up anything from Uncle Steve in that tweet?
Well, I mean, he has been, you know, kind of one of the more transparent owners on social media, has tried to have that connection with fans. I wanted to see from just an overall standpoint of, you know, where certain trade candidates might line up for not only just, you know, the Mets. And I think that starting pitching is going to have to be something that they address just from the sheer amount of injuries. Plus, and I told you at the beginning of the year, how long can you stretch Clay Holmes, David Peterson, you know, you're thinking of guys, Paul Blackburn coming back from injury. I think they're going to be in that market, you know, irregardless of what this performance looks like here in the next, I don't know, you know, handful of weeks. If I were to give you some predictions here, you know, would you look more towards maybe some back end help? Like, let's say the starting pitching market is very expensive, and it won't shock me if it is. And I don't know if the Marlins would be keen on trading Sandy Alcantara within the division. They might with the Hall potentially, but I don't know if the Mets are willing to do that. Does a Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly interest you from Arizona? And I say that because the Arizona Diamondbacks might be as good at starting fires and not putting them out with any bullpen that's going right now. I mean, they cannot save a lead to save their lives at this point. I know Arizona said they don't want to sell, but they may be forced into it. And they probably have the one-stop shop for almost everything that any team could want. So you're thinking position player side, Eugenio Suarez, Josh Naylor. You're thinking from a pitching standpoint, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, just to name a few. Either of those starting pitchers interest you as a Met fan?
I do not want Zach Gallen. I've watched enough Zach Gallen recently to go, this guy's supposed to be an ace? This guy's supposed to be a front of the rotation guy? I'm supposed to bet on Zach Gallen? You and I talked about it too a couple weeks ago, where his quote, where he's like, hey, we don't start playing better, there's going to be a lot of changes around here. And he was talking about himself as well. And I'm like, is he pitching to get out of Arizona? I don't want anything to do with that guy for a haul, as you're talking about, that it would probably require to get him. Maybe a change of scenery does him well, but I do not see big time ace change my fortunes if I'm Uncle Steve. I'd rather wait and be patient, as he says in that tweet, if you're a Met backer. And again, you can get him right now, plus $1.55 to win the division. They're only a game and a half back. So it was as bad a weekend as you're possibly going to have against the Pirates, a team we don't think is very good. But I'm going to be with Uncle Steve. I'm going to be with Will Hill and practice patience. We're going to calm it down, Mets, and we're going to try to be therapeutic about this. It's 162. It was a terrible three. Let's not panic in Queens just yet. But if this continues, I will panic. Let's get to our best bets brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And Daily Diamond, we saw some action in there today. And again, when you get to that pitching matchup that we have in Boston, maybe a look to the Reds here early, Jensen. What do you make of that pitching matchup here with Chase Burns against Garrett Crochet?
Yeah, for people just joining us, a couple of leans we had have locked them in as official plays here for your VSiN Pro subscriber. Let's go Ellie De La Cruz, two or more total bases, been swinging as hot a bat as anybody outside of Spencer Steer here as of late. In that lineup, Chase Burns, five or more strikeouts parlayed with Garrett Crochet, seven or more strikeouts. It was $1.65 when I put it in on DraftKings. Yeah, a little bit of juice, but I think the juice will be worth the squeeze there. You just think of just the preeminent swing and miss potential that's up there. And, you know, if we really wanted to get pretty adventurous, Dave, if I were to throw it out to you right now, I don't know if both can get to double digits as far as strikeouts go, but if you wanted to, it's 29-1 for Garrett Crochet and Chase Burns to have 10 punchies apiece. If you think it gets, you know, kind of where we were, I mean, Burns had 8 strikeouts last time. So if you want to go just 8-8, that's plus +435 for Crochet and Burns to have 8 strikeouts apiece. So we went a bit more conservatively. Just knowing right now, at least on DraftKings, the over-under for strikeouts, they actually have Crochet juiced or at plus money to the over 9. It's 8.5 is his over at plus $1.15. And Burns, he was at 4.5 for his big league debut. He's up to 5.5, and that is at minus $1.50. So,
wow,
just food for thought there. If you want to play a little parlay ladder and think we get some dominant starting pitching in Fenway Park tonight, then I think that's probably your way to go.
My question to you would be this, Jensen. Crochet, I have no doubt about, right? I know that he'll go as long as required. What about Burns on the other side? In the second start now, first road start here. You did play the Yankees first time out, and you look great against a good top of the lineup there in New York. How long do they let Burns go, even if he doesn't have problems? Let's say he's cruising along. Can we get 6 innings out of the kid?
I think so. I think so. And again, that's kind of why we went a little bit lower with the strikeouts, just knowing that, hey, I mean, it was right out of the chute. And this is probably the advantageous part of the handicap is, Dave, all these teams are seeing him for the first time.
Yep.
You know, and technically the Red Sox just have one big league start of video plus, you know, the minor league starts to go off of. But it's a completely different animal when those hitters get in the box. You're like, oh, okay, this is the fury coming at me here. So a lot of this predicated on command, right? They're not going to let him go, you know, heavy workload, heavy leverage, you know, pitch count innings early. I still think this is a smarter play, kind of buying down a little bit. But, hey, you want a little pizza money on some upward mobility here? I'm not mad at you either.
Maybe the other marquee game that we can look at is going to be the Jays and the Yankees. And again, that's going to be Rodon going up against Max Scherzer in his return. Talked a little bit about this, with Will Hill. You've got some other ways to attack this matchup today. How are you playing this one?
Yeah, so for Daily Diamond, we're going to do the Blue Jays run line plus 1.5, and we'll parlay that with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to record a hit. That's plus $1.32. I feel that's very manageable. If you do want to stay with Vladdy, I think his two or more total bases is a great way to go today as well. He's had great career numbers against Carlos Rodon. So if you want to just play the matchup in and of itself, also knowing that Vladdy has really been swinging a hot bat, that is excellent. Mention it also, too. Something has to give here. The Blue Jays as a home team have been the best to the over in the American League as far as American League matchups. The Yankees have been the best to the under. So really no feel on the total for me whatsoever. As far as the run line, Blue Jays have been the best as a home team covering that. So that's why we installed that part of the parlay. The Yankees have been one of the worst in the American League team as an away team. So just something to food for thought for people in a otherwise abbreviated slate with really, Dave, not too many other advantageous matchups to really look at. I mean, maybe Giants, D-backs late, just knowing it's Logan Webb, Ryan Nelson, who has pitched well for Arizona. But other than that, kind of subpar here. Maybe a day to catch your breath and have some family
time. There you go.
If you're a Major League Baseball bettor.
And two plays I gave out earlier, I'll give them again here for best bets, and that is the Reds. Going to play them 40-1 here for the most wins in July. They've got a seven-game home stretch right before the break where they've got four against the Marlins, three against the Rockies in Cincinnati. You'd like to see them go at least 6-1 in those games to get you a shot here because it does get tougher when they come back off the All-Star break. And then took Jensen's advice, played them 50-1 here instead of the shorter number at 15-1 to win the division. Let's hope they can get in, whether it's wild card and or run down the Cubs. 50-1 with that rotation, getting Hunter Green back. I'd love to have that ticket in pocket if they can make it to the second season. Right now, we got a $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VEASAN. All you got to do right now is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You're going to get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet's going to give you a $100 deposit match. VEASAN will complete that trifecta with a free VEASAN Pro subscription through October 31st. That in and of itself is a $200 value. That is the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VEASAN. Head over to VEASAN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening up a new account in response to this very offer. It will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. We're going to go over the big pond to Wimbledon, but Danny Kloppinger is here stateside with us. Break down everything at the All England Club. That is next here. VEASAN by the books.
VEASAN by the books, right here on VEASAN.
We are back, VEASAN by the books. Going to have Zach Cohen join us in the next segment, get us all caught up on what's going on in the NBA, because that league never stops as well in the quote-unquote offseason. But right now, what a pleasure to be joined once again by Danny Kloppinger. Give her a follow on X, as I do at Danny Klupp. Does a great job on the Tennis Channel and joins us here now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Danny, let me get right to the brass tacks here. It's already going on here at the All England Club over there at Wimbledon. We talk about this all the time in golf, out of the four majors, right? Which one is the best? Which one do we like the most? For the slams, this feels like it's got the most panache, cachet, if you will. Is it your favorite out of the four slams?
I don't know how it couldn't be. It's such an interesting tournament, not just because of the aura around it and the prestigiousness of Wimbledon, but also the fact that it's such a small season. I say that because there's only 3 weeks of grass court play that leads into Wimbledon. And then once Wimbledon happens, all of tennis just puts it away for the rest of the year. So it's really like this 5-week season. And because it's a different surface, it's right in the middle of the year, fatigue hits. Who's better on this than clay, where some people may have just taken a nap through the clay court season because that wasn't their strongest surface. They can do a little bit better on a grass court. It's really interesting. And it actually, if you're a gambling degenerate like we all are, it's actually a really fun time to play on tennis.
Yeah, it is, Danny. And again, a Lewis Ross administration, we are always ladies first here. So we start with the women on this side of the draw. And I believe you were with us and you mentioned Hey, don't forget about Coco Gauff when you're sizing up the futures for the French Open. That one gets home. She's 8-1 starting the tournament here at Wimbledon. The ladies' side, and I know there's different ways for people just getting into Grand Slam tennis or of tennis, period. Size it up for us from the overall futures board. What stands out to you, maybe as some favorites, but maybe also some value selections as well?
Well, let's start with Coco because you brought her up in particular. She's actually never made it past the fourth round at Wimbledon. This is not her strongest tournament by any stretch of the imagination. So you add that into the mix of the fact that she just won a major, which is an exhausting task to do. She goes on this press tour in America, flies out to Europe again, tries to get back on European time, has had a couple early round losses on these tune-up tournaments on the grass. She's just not the direction I would be headed in terms of who will win this tournament. It's not that I'm not on the Coco Gauff train. I always am. It's just this particular one, not for me, especially when you look at who she could play. Diana Yastremska in the first round, Victoria Azarenka was a former world number one. Sophia Kenin was an Australian Open champion as well. And actually, Sophia Kenin beat Coco Gauff a couple years ago in the first round at Wimbledon. So just looking at her path, I don't think it's worth taking Coco Gauff in this case. I hope I'm proven wrong because it's always fun to see her win. But I will draw your eyes to pretty far down that board, but another American, Madison Keys, at 18-1. She has a 77% winning percentage on grass. She's super strong on the surface. She's been to the quarterfinals twice at Wimbledon before. She won her first major at the start of the year. We talked about her, right? She won the Australian Open. She finally cracked the code and won her first major. So she's riding high on confidence. She hits the crap out of the ball, which is really important here on grass. And she's got great odds. And this is a tournament, guys, that Barbara Krejcikova, who won it last year, played like 8 matches in the whole year and came and won Wimbledon. Then the year before that, you've got Markéta Vondrousova, who nobody even knew who she really was, at least in mainstream tennis following. So this one on the women's side is really fun because it's just kind of always up for grabs. So although you've got your chalkier pick with Aryna Sabalenka there, that's why you're still getting pretty good value because Wimbledon draws out some very strange results.
Well, I love the way you phrased it here because Madison Keys, she wins for good old US of A down there, down under. And then you get Coco winning there in Paris. Could we look at, is Jessica Pegula at 25-1? If we get the American train running here in the first three slams, is there any shot or you do think Keys at 18-1 would be the better American play?
I think Keys is the better American play, but like I told you, there's only a couple tournaments that lead in to Wimbledon and Jessica Pegula just won one on Saturday. And there's no better confidence booster than winning a tournament, right? So because of that, I would say, of course, and she beat Iga Świątek, which is a name I know most casual tennis fans will hear of because she was at world number one for so long. Iga isn't having her strongest year, but she's still in the top 10 and strong anytime she plays in a final. And Jessica Pegula just beat her in straight sets. So yes, there's absolutely a play on Jess at 25-1.
Danny, always great to see some of the big heavy hitters too on the men's side. And as we change the surface, does it change the handicap whatsoever? Of course, you have your usual suspects at the top with Alcaraz and Sinner. But do we find our way down, just like you gave us out with Madison Keys a little farther down the futures board there? Do we still look farther there? Or is it really just, man, the cream is so high at the top, it's going to be difficult to take down either of those top contenders?
I mean, Carlos Alcaraz has won this last 2 years. He's on a 14-match win streak. He's currently playing right now, but he's playing against a guy, Fabio Fognini, who's probably retiring here in a half a second. So not retiring on during this match because he's injured, retiring just from the sport in general because he's aging. He once was a top tenner, now not so much. I'm sure Carlos Alcaraz will turn up the heat here pretty soon as an even first set is about to wrap up here. But Carlos Alcaraz is the favorite for a reason. He 2 years ago played a 5-set thriller against Novak Djokovic, a guy that won this tournament 7 times and won that for his first Wimbledon win, then followed it up with another win over Novak Djokovic last year, this one in straight sets. It was a little bit more impressive in terms of just the beatdown. Not necessarily it wasn't a quality match, just he outplayed Novak Djokovic in that final last year. But to go down that list in the third and you're still getting Novak Djokovic at plus 650, it's kind of the same conversation we all had for the French Open. this guy just wants to crack the record of the most slams ever. He's one slam away. It's all he talks about in his press conferences. All he wants to do is have the record of slams. All he's focused on are slams. He just recently won his 100th career title, which was another one of those records he just wanted to add to his tool belt there. So because he just did that a couple weeks ago, and this is the one major at the beginning of the year, everyone said if he's going to do it, he's going to do it at Wimbledon because he's won it 7 times. He's made the final the last 6 years in a row. This is a pretty good plate, or a pretty good path, I should say, for him to at least make the semifinals. So that's just talking about 2 wins after that to be able to lift the trophy. And at plus 650, getting good odds on a guy that can do that, it's pretty fun.
Danny, we know that obviously, you know, Nadal and Fed aren't walking through the door with the big three. Novak's still there at plus 650, third betting choice. But because now we've finally got Alcaraz against Sinner, this feels like this would be Sinner's better surface to beat Carlos if they got to a final, right? So he's 2-1 betting underdog here. Carlos plus $1.20. Can we make the case that if that's the final that we get, that that would be the best option for the Italian to beat Carlos?
Yeah, I mean, you can absolutely make the case because I know when you look at the head-to-head, especially the recent head-to-head, Carlos has won a lot of these closer matches with Jannik Sinner. But watching that French Open final, 5.5 hours, neither of them took a bathroom break. Neither of them saw a physio. It was a matter of the slimmest margins on who won that match. That very easily could have gone Sinner's way. So that's Carlos's best surface by far. So, you know, there's always a given chance that Jannik Sinner can beat Carlos Alcaraz. He's done it in the past. He won the Australian Open. We're talking about a guy that had 3 months off of the tour and still made it to the final of the French Open 2-3 weeks after he came back to the tour and still was able to play a 5.5 hour thriller of a final. That means that he can mentally be tough. Physically, he was there, you know, which is a lot of the question marks that people had. So of course he can. Of course there's a reason to have a ticket on Sinner. I would lean Carlos Alcaraz just because of his pedigree on grass and proven pedigree on grass. He also just won a tune-up tournament coming into Wimbledon. Carlos Alcaraz, all he seems to do is win right now. So it's hard for me to hop off that train. But yes, Dave, there is an argument for Sinner.
I love it. Danny, about 30 seconds left with you. We are not dress code aficionados or sticklers here.
No.
But if you could amend the all white there at the All England Club, would that be something you'd be interested in?
No, I love it. I love the classic look. Everybody knows to get your Wimbledon whites in order. It's chic. It's cool. And I absolutely love it. You can only have a little bit of color in there. Also, by the way, bet on Taylor Fritz to get out of his quarter. I had to throw that in there.
Oh, Taylor Fritz to get out of the quarters. Okay, I like that number.
Done.
By the way, I'm watching right now. You're right. Carlos did survive that first set. He got a break there, so he won the first set 7-5. The guys are wearing T-shirts now, Danny. Back in my day, they had to tuck in the shirt and wear a collar. Come on, guys. It's the All England Club, for goodness sake.
Still get to wear all white, Dave. I don't care what form it comes
in. All right. They can wear the T-shirts. That's acceptable for Danny. Danny, enjoy Wimbledon. We appreciate your insight, as always, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks so much. And tell Zach Cohen hi. Get his Wimbledon picks. He's a good tennis guy as well.
Oh, we'll get those from Zach coming up. Give her a follow at Danny Clump on X and does a great job over on the Tennis Channel. Zach Cohen joining us next. We do have some news in the NBA we'll discuss when you come back with us right here at VSiN by the Books. Talking tennis in the last segment with Danny Kloppinger. Always a good time to catch up with Zach Cohen, our senior writer and editor here at VSiN. You can give him a follow as we do at Betting on X for my money. One of the best X handles out there. And the one and only Zach Cohen joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. As Danny was wrapping up the conversation, Zach, she said, be sure to ask Zach about his Wimbledon picks as well. Before we dip back into the NBA, we saw, looks like Alcaraz survived that first set, 7-5 here. We get it. It's chalky. Alcaraz and Sinner on the men's side. Zach, is that what we want? Do we want the big boys to be there in the final like we saw in the French. I'm assuming that's what the TV executives would like.
Yeah, I would like to see Sinner versus Djokovic in the semifinal, then hopefully Sinner versus Alcaraz in a rematch of what we saw at Roland Garros. I mean, I do have some futures on Novak Djokovic to win his quarter, and I had a little sprinkle on him to win the tournament, but I do really want to see that rematch badly.
That'd be great. And Zach, just overall, for people that are just new into jumping into not only tennis, but the Grand Slams here, how different of a handicap now from the clay, obviously the French Open, to the grass here at the All England Club, and maybe even some guys, I know the favorites on the men's side are what they are for a great reason. Any value that people might want to look at to jump in on as we get into the opening rounds here?
Yeah, I mean, big servers definitely play a little bit better at Wimbledon, at least in the first week of the tournament when the grass is in good shape. Like in the second week, it gets really sloppy and choppy. You know, the bounces get a little bit weird. That's why you see a guy like Alexander Bublik play much better on grass than he does everywhere else. And he's way up on this odds board right behind Daniil Medvedev, who just got eliminated. But Bublik is a player that just had a really good grass court season for 2-3 weeks, is viewed as a contender in this tournament. He's going to have to face Jack Draper, one of the other favorites who plays really well on grass pretty early in the tournament, but the winner of that one has a pretty good chance of making the semifinals.
I'll just say this, and I've said this for a long time now. Tennis has done the best job once they got Cyclops back in the day of doing instant replay, right? Like they're the absolute best at it. It's quick, it's efficient, the whole thing. But because they're so good at it, it's like no more arguments. We don't get any John McEnroe's. Yep. Chalk flew up. That ball was in. Everybody saw it but you. There's no more arguing with the linesman anymore, Zach. And I miss that as somebody like to watch those Americans get all upset over there in the prim All England Club. So I guess, do we think any Americans, is Draper our best shot here to maybe throw a kick in the plans over there in England?
I mean, Fritz is probably the best chance. He has a really tough draw, but he's a very good grass court player. He just won 2 titles on grass this season, and it's only a 3-week, 4-week grass season. So doing that is definitely impressive, but the draw is brutal. I agree with you, by the way. I like players arguing, and yeah. I also like the goofy pointing to the line on clay, too. So I don't want to get rid of the lines judges there, too.
And, of course, Draper is UK, not an American, so yeah. I tried to sneak him in on our side. But he's not. Let's get to the NBA here. And right now, the league really does not sleep. And we did see some big-time names back in. Of course, LeBron did that for $52 million with the Lakers here. And also in L.A. with Harden re-upping there with the Clips. What'd you make of those moves there? And was that expected in your eyes that LeBron and Harden would stay in L.A.?
I expected Harden would stay with the Clippers in the fashion that he did, re-signing a new deal. The LeBron one was a little interesting because he opted in. Not normally a player that opts in, usually likes to get out and sign a new deal. And seeing him kind of put some public pressure on the Lakers afterwards was definitely interesting. I know that there's already some conspiracies about him, you know, trying to force a trade. But I do think that they're going to end up being, you know, pretty lucky with DeAndre Ayton having been cut last night. Yep. By Portland. They've been a team that has been in desperate need of a center, the Lakers, and it seems like they are going to be the team that ends up signing DeAndre Ayton, and Ayton on a cheap contract, motivated to be playing for a new one, playing with Luka Doncic and LeBron James. That's kind of the dream scenario for a player that has all the talent in the world and just needs a little bit of motivation and somebody kind of to get in his face every day. We saw it with Phoenix, with Chris Paul and Devin Booker barking at him. For a few years, it went really, really well. So I kind of think the Lakers have addressed their center position if they do end up getting him.
And honestly, Zach, the only other person I was thinking of, and obviously just with the finals finishing between Indiana and OKC, was Miles Turner. Anxious to see now kind of how that you know works itself out as an unrestricted free agent. Just the landscape as you see it right now. I know we talked before we came on about how the apron has affected not only just where negotiations will go, but potential sign-in trades, things of that nature. The next big dominoes in your mind to fall, who do we focus on? Or is it one of those things where we got to sit back and maybe, you know, the Giannis conversations, where does he ultimately end up? What are you focused on now in the coming weeks where the NBA offseason is?
Yeah, I think that the Turner one's a big one. I'd be really surprised if he doesn't re-sign with Indiana, because it does seem like they have come out and said they're open to going into the second apron to re-sign him. I think the next big dominoes will be trades, even if it's a smaller one. Like I mentioned it off the air, like Nickeil Alexander-Walker is a player that I see being on the move. I don't see how the Timberwolves can afford to re-sign him. So that's a 3-and-D guard that does a really good job of playing, you know, both the one and the two. And it seems like there's some real interest from the Atlanta Hawks, who have already made a splash in this offseason trading for Kristaps Porzingis. So that's a team that has a $25 million trade player exception. They can very easily fit him into their cap space. That's not going to be an easy thing for teams to do, as you mentioned, with the new apron rules. So I think they'll keep an eye on the Hawks, because that's a team that's already up to 22-1 in the Eastern Conference. We all keep talking about how this East is wide open. I'd be looking at Atlanta. I was able to get Atlanta like about a week ago at 90-1
wow.
before the KP deal, and that has just plummeted.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to discuss here, because, you know, we're talking about the NFL betting guy. We've been talking about NFL. We're going to talk NFL and college football here till the cows come home. I already have a feature play in for the NHL for the Stanley Cup for next year. I know people don't like to put that money away, Zach, like you just did with the ATL feature there at 90-1. But do you still see value on the board here now with this changing free agency, trying to be ahead a little bit of these anticipated moves? Because, like, I look at an OKC price. They're plus $1.50 here to repeat as Western Conference champions, just to get out of the West here. Like, is there any value in that number now, or would you rather see what the Lakers do become if they get a DeAndre Ayton with Houston and their changes, and stay away from the shorter numbers and look to the longer prices?
I would stay away from OKC. I feel like I'm almost like an OKC hater at this point, because I wasn't all that impressed with what we saw in the playoffs. I just thought that there were games that they really just didn't show up offensively. And I think that that's something that can carry over into next season. And I still kind of wonder what would have happened in that game seven if Tyrese Haliburton did not get injured. So I think there's some value in the Western Conference. I'd be looking at a team like the Grizzlies, to be honest. Oh. I feel a little crazy in saying that. Down at 110-1. I think that all the news is about, you know, they traded Desmond Bane. They're looking to rebuild, but they have not come out and said that. They still want to build around Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And they have some guys that can collectively fill in and play Bane's role at a pretty high level. I mean, they traded for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in that deal. Caldwell-Pope had a really bad season for the Magic, but he was one of the big money free agency signings of last summer. He's not old. I mean, he just came off a season where he shot 34% from three, but he's a career 38, 39% three-point shooter. So I think going to a team like Memphis that has a much better offensive infrastructure, he's going to bounce back in a big way. And I loved the draft pick that they made in Cedric Coward, who is a really good 3-and-D player out of Washington State that it seems ready to contribute right now. So I just kind of like what they have there, especially with Jalen Wells coming back from injury. I'd be looking at a long shot like that.
All right, Zach, last one from me. We know that it was too early of an exit in these parts for my Cleveland Cavaliers. and a lot was made of the whole physicality argument. They're not tough enough. You know, they really need to kind of get an uptick in that area. How do they address what looks like to be, you know, a pretty open Eastern Conference, but with what they have versus what they can go do and what they've done already? Your cliff notes on kind of where the Cavaliers stand headed into next year.
Well, I really like the swap that they just made in getting Lonzo Ball in there for Isaac Okoro. I think that Ball, when he's healthy, still offers a lot. Like you said, physicality defensively at the guard position, still a next-level passer in terms of being a connective piece and a really good three-point shooter. So if Ball is healthy, I like bringing him in and letting Ty Jerome walk. I mean, I really enjoyed watching Ty Jerome play, but seeing him play from the regular season to the postseason was a huge drop-off. And I will say, like, for as bad as it might have seemed that they lost to the Pacers, that loss, you know, aged pretty well when considering that they were very banged up in that series. They'll get Garland back. They'll be healthy. I view them as the favorites to win the Eastern Conference right now.
All right, Zach, very quickly here, about 30 seconds. So you mentioned Memphis at 110-1 as a long shot there to win the conference in the West. Dallas at 25-1, number one pick, Cooper Flagg. You got to hope on the health here of guys like Kyrie and AD staying healthy. Is that number too short for you, or should they be that excited about Cooper and what he brings?
It's not too short for me. I have a future on Dallas to win the title at 40-1.
Oh.
I love what the Mavericks have. That rotation is loaded. So I think that if Kyrie Irving doesn't, you know, miss all the way until March. Like, the rumor is January or February, and it sounds like they're, you know, gearing up to sign D'Angelo Russell as his replacement. When, you know, Irving comes back, that's as good of an 8 or 9 man rotation as you could possibly have in terms of just having size, toughness, experience. They have everything. So Nico Harrison's a genius.
Revenge for Nico. How about that? I mean, you guys all take that for the trade heard around the world. Zach, we appreciate your time as always, my friend. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, guys.
There he is. Give him a follow on X at Betting on X. Jensen, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll do it again tomorrow. Coming up next, it's a numbers game with Kelly Vidlin and Gil Alexander.